Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the free version of the Michael Savage podcast, and I'm going to keep it free for all of you. But there are many of you who would love to be able to listen to my show without any ads. I love ads, but many of you want to listen to the podcast free of ads. So we created something for you, a solution. We call it the Savage Premium. For less than the price of one flat, tasteless beer at your local bar, you can receive access to all of my podcasts going back years ad-free for just $3.99. That's it, $3.99 a month. You'll get not only my ad-free podcast, but you will also occasionally receive access to material that is exclusive for members only, and I'm going to give you the list in a minute of what you've missed. You're going to get an occasional monologue from me, maybe a reading from one of my novels, sneak peeks of interviews before anyone else hears them, archive pieces dating back to 1994. Many things that come up, you're going to get exclusive access to Michael Savage material. Details can be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com, and if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm and search Savage Premium. That's glow.fm and search Savage Premium. Now, you will always have access to my free weekly podcast. I want to be clear about that. That's my promise to you. But if you want less ads and more Savage, join the Savage Premium Club today and never miss a spoken word of mine. It's glow.fm/savagepremium. You can find it on michaelsavage.com. And here's some of the stuff that you have missed so far. Michael Savage reading from his best-selling novel, Countdown to Mecca. My words, my voice. Savage reads from one of his lost journals, Fiji, 1968. Savage's first drive-time show, Hour One. My interview with the Jewish gangster, very popular. I read from my first written published article, Who Is at the Helm, from 1965. It's heard nowhere but on my premium site. I read passages from my novel, Abuse of Power. We replayed Fat Al's Tuna. My Savage show from 324.94, the earliest show in the archive, 324.94. My interview with Donald Trump from 110.2011. 110.2011, while Mark Levin was mocking him and Sean Hannity was mocking him and the others were mocking him, I was interviewing Trump. Much more. And remember, subscribers also get ad-free podcasts every week. The cost is less than a beer at a bar, and you get a better buzz with the Savage Premium. So go to glow.fm/savagepremium for full access to ad-free podcasts and exclusive sound you'll not hear anywhere else. Thank you very much.
How are you today? Miserable out there, isn't it? Oh, what a world. What a world. It's actually a perfect world in one way and a horrible world in another, isn't it? So here we are. I was going to talk about when pasta was spaghetti. So we're just warming up now. I've just come out onto the stage. We're putting on the lights. And I'm going to... Does anyone remember when I did when pasta was spaghetti? There's terrible things going on right now. The hatred for Jewish people that's been inspired by Louis Farrakhan and picked up by sub-morons like Kanye West is shocking, actually. I never thought I would live to see this day. And by the way, words lead to actions. I want to remind you of something. Most of you don't know that it's not just sticks and stones and all that. Words lead to actions. The Nazis did not begin by putting Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, priests, and all those who opposed Hitler in the concentration camps. They didn't begin with that. You know what they began with? Words, like Kanye West and Louis Farrakhan. You're watching what happens when riffraff, garbage, filth from the street, garbage and haters take control of a media. Remember what I said, everything begins with words. Words are very powerful. They have their own energy. And so when you let people like Kanye West get away with this, then you got the sub-morons in the streets who go out and knock people in the head with sticks, beat up poor, innocent, religious Jewish people who are defenseless, by the way. This is how it begins. Words. So I thought I would read to you today when pasta was spaghetti. I'm going to actually try to find it. I don't have it. I wanted to make it something nice for you today. Let's see if it's on Google. I'll see if they have it when pasta was spaghetti. I'm sure it's on the internet. Let's see who stole it. No, I don't see it. It's not here. Would you believe it? I asked my assistant to send it, but he's not available right now, so I may not be able to. It's in one of my books. I put it on Twitter the other day in another context, and it was this. I said, when pasta was spaghetti, there were no celebrity chefs, just men who could cook. Celebrity chefs are the equivalent of real hose wives. There's no such thing as a celebrity chef. That's a misnomer. So if you go back, I'm an older guy, obviously. I wasn't born yesterday. So I go back to going into working, they call it working class. I hate the word working class. Everybody I know worked. Working class, what does that mean? That's a derogatory phrase for people who work with their hands. So to make a long story short, we'd go into this little Italian restaurant. I can remember to this day, it was on 14th Street, and I don't know the avenue, in Manhattan, and it was a chain of Italian restaurants. Who knows what they were called, Romeo's, I don't know the name of it. People would remember it. And it had like a big Italian guy with a white hat on in the window made of, neon lights. And I remember going in there on a cold winter day with my folks, my mother and father, when we wouldn't eat out much. We didn't have a lot of extra money, everything we cooked at home. But that was a real treat because we had an uncle who lived on 14th Street, Nate. And we would go there, I don't know how often, a few times a year. So it's freezing outside in the streets of Manhattan. And maybe a light snow is falling to set the stage. And you look through the window and you can hardly see in. But you know, there's tremendous life inside that diner-like narrow restaurant, which, by the way, I then took a liking to in San Francisco and North Beach years later. There were quite a few like that when I first got here in the 70s. There was Little Joe's, almost exactly like a repeat of Romeo's Spaghetti. So from the outside, looking in, you don't know what's going on. The minute you open the door, you walk into civilization and life. It's amazing to me how some cultures come here, like Italians, and they bring a whole life with them. A cuisine that the world falls in love with. Music, poetry, art. So many beautiful things brought here by the Italian people, and all we hear about are the mafia. I understand why people got angry with The Sopranos, even though I love the series or The Godfather, because it typified a small percentage of the Italian people. The same way the banker Ganef class of the Jews typify a very small sliver of the Jewish people. You get it? Or the Irish drunk, the stereotype. Most Irish don't drink like that anymore, incidentally. So all people are not the same. All peoples are not the same. All cultures don't come here and bring us the same. Some cultures come here and bring us great things. Not all. Some come here as leeches and bums and parasites, and they contribute nothing to this society. They're bums living in $400 a night hotel rooms not working. That's what Biden is bringing in now. Have you seen any of these immigrants working, the new ones? Most of the Hispanic immigrants that I have come to know do not want these bums here that are being brought in by Biden. They don't want them here because these are hardworking Hispanics, and know these bums are here as leeches. But I didn't mean to talk about that. So I wanted to go into the idea of celebrity chef. Most of the chefs in my day were men. They were older guys, period. They knew how to cook. And you'd see them, and I would observe. It's like, kids observe everything very clearly. And I'd see these older Italian men, they were like surgeons and professors to me, over the steaming pot of pasta going up to the ceiling, or as they're stirring that big pot of sauce. Remember I told you the story years ago about Fat Al's tuna? Raise your hand if you remember Fat Al's Tuna. Anyone remember Fat Al's Tuna? The 400-pound Italian who worked in the Catskill Mountains? Fat Al's Tuna. So he would, I was a busboy in the hotel, at one of those hotels as a kid, teenager, to work my way through college. And there was this Italian guy, Fat Al, one of those old 400-pound guys. They used to be around. You don't see them anymore. They're old. Either they died or they're on gluten-free diets. I don't know where they went. They were remarkable people, those really heavy fat guys. And you could easily make a mistake in thinking they were weak. They were usually strong as iron. And they could swat you like with the back of the hand like a bear and knock you across the floor. They may look like they were blubbery, but underneath it was steel. So he had his arm in the tureen up to here, mixing a tuna for a hotel. You understand it, for people in a hotel. And he's mixing with his arm like this. No spatula, no machine. His arm, his big, blubbery, hairy arm is in the tuna fish up to here. And he's stirring with his arm. And I'm like this 16-year-old kid in the hotel kitchen. I had never seen anything like this. And Fat Al would look at me. He had a cigarette in his mouth with an ash coming off the end of it. Because remember, one hand was busy. The other hand was holding on to a table. And he's stirring a tuna. And he's stirring it with the arm. And I'm looking at him and he says, "Don't worry, kid, the ash adds flavor to the tuna fish." This is the sense of humor that I grew up with. Somehow no one called the authorities that had him arrested. No one died from ash poisoning in the tuna fish in the Paramount Hotel in the Catskill Mountains. So his arm would be there and he mixed the tuna and they put in vats of like mayonnaise, like that much mayonnaise. Did they measure it? Did they have special measuring cups and measuring spoons to make their food? No, they weren't Gordon Ramsay. I love these fake chefs. They're all so fraudulent to me. You don't have to be like that to know how to cook food. You just have to first learn to love food and know how to cook the food.
Now, Fat Al's Tuna, that's a recipe. When I was a boy working as a busboy in the Shanks Paramount Hotel, I saw how tuna was really made. Fat Al was a 350-pounder. Now, when he made tuna in a tureen, he didn't use a mixed mass. They used his hairy forearm. He had a cigarette dangling from the right side of his mouth, and the kitchen was banging and bustling, and the people were out there eating a ninth meal of the afternoon. And he was mixing a tuna. He would throw the cans of tuna in. They'd throw in vats of mayonnaise, and the guy stirred it with his arm. He rolled up his undershirt. You see, you got to visualize this. Fat Al would lean over that tureen with the arm, the big, giant Italian arm, full of hair, and his arm was mayonnaise thick up to his armpit. And he's got the arm moving around, and he said, "You see, kid, you keep moving it till you get a nice creamy consistency." Meanwhile, the ash is falling off his cigarette. I guess that helped the taste of the tuna because the people never complained. They loved it. Now, that's a tuna. There is a proper tuna with a little sweat and arm hair. Now, that is a good tuna fish recipe. Other than that, I don't want to talk about recipes.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
So going back to it, pasta with spaghetti, I'm still waiting to get it up. And I don't know why Doug, where it is, why he hasn't sent it to me. I'm going to call him. Oh, I can't. I got to go get the phone. I'm going to call him and you can listen in as I yell at him. Landline, old landline.
Hi, this is Doug.
Doug, I emailed you 10 minutes ago. I'm actually live on YouTube talking to you, waiting for when pasta was spaghetti.
I sent it about a minute and a half ago.
Okay, hold on. You're on candid camera. When pasta, that's Doug laughing. Doug's been working with me forever. And he did send it. So I'm going to print it out and read it for my loyal audience today. Where is it?
I don't have it. That was the MP3.
Hello, Doug. I'm trying to read it, not play it.
I wasn't aware of that.
See, everything has to be explained 18 times. Nothing to, let's listen. Maybe I'll just play it.
We're playing Italian music because I have a treat for you. I found the poem When Pasta Was Spaghetti in my archives. It was written, let's see, Michael Savage, August 1985, written in a lightning storm at 40,000 feet over Cheyenne, Wyoming. When I thought the plane was going to crash, I wrote When Pasta Was Spaghetti. So here it is, whether you like it or not, all right? So you liberals get ready to sneer, and you sane people get ready to enjoy it because it's a wonderful poem. So play the music again. Go ahead. They got the mood. We got the mood set up. It's called When Pasta Was Spaghetti, and try to imagine it, all right? The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then, in neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged over window on a cold winter's eve. There was life. Marinara sauce that smacked of the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smiles scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Play the music, basta.
Well, that was one of my best pieces. And I remember when I wrote it, I was on an airplane in a thunderstorm over Cheyenne, Wyoming. And those were the days, my friend, that I thought they'd never end. I remember to this day, the day I wrote it. I'm an interesting personality to myself, never mind anyone else. I don't know about anyone else. But when I get under pressure, strange things happen to me. And one of them is I become almost giddy with creativity. What can you do? So I'm in this airplane, 35,000 feet. We're flying over Cheyenne, Wyoming. Either I was going from San Francisco to New York to sell a book or coming back from New York after I didn't sell a book. I'll tell you that story another day. Going to all those publisher meetings as a young father trying to sell a book, and all the women who were in publishing in those days taking us to the publisher lunches. And if I didn't sell that book, we didn't have money for quite a while. And I remember coming, what would happen after those publisher meetings, they take the author out, they still do that, to lunch, and you love them because, I mean, they were great meals and drinking and eating. And either they would say, yes, I want the book and you're going to get an advance of X, or I'm sorry, we're not going to buy it. And I'd wind up going to 8th Avenue at those days. That was the age when it was still pretty run down. And they had these cheap bars, and I would drink as much as I could, as fast as I could out of depression, because I was going to go home without a sale. So don't think I don't know what it's like to struggle for a living. So to make a long story short, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, I'm in this airplane coming back from New York, or going to New York to present a book proposal to one of the women who was running the publishing industry at the time, as I said. And I know this flight, there was a Chinese lady sitting next to me. We were in first class. I don't know how I upgraded the tickets at that time. It was a very big deal for me. And she was a very elegant, middle-aged woman. I tried to engage her just in a polite conversation. She was not interested, and I didn't bother her, in other words, after that. I'd say hello. You know, I don't know why people think that you're supposed to talk to them on an airplane. You never saw them before. You're never going to see them again in there. All of a sudden, they're your best friend. So she was dignified. She didn't want this guy talking to her. I said, okay, no problem. So we continued the flight. In those days, you could drink as much as you wanted, and I would drink as much as I wanted. The minute I would get on that plane, I would ask the stewardess for two little bottles, whatever they were. Or I think I brought red wine with me in a bag and drank it, because it was better than what they served on the plane. And I would drink my way across the country to make certain I didn't have high anxiety. And so, anyway, we're flying. A couple hours later, we get into a thunderstorm, 35,000 feet, and the plane is now rocking and rolling like a roller coaster. It was one of those with lightning outside the window. So this woman who wouldn't talk to me freaks out. She doesn't say a word. She's scared to death. Everyone in the plane was screaming. And she grabbed my arm and didn't say anything. I understood she was just afraid and trying to hold on to a guy next to her, which was fine. And I remember in the middle of the storm starting to write when pasta was spaghetti. In fact, I could find it in one of my journals, probably in the original book that I wrote it in. And it was so much fun to be able to take my anxiety and transmute it into creativity that was so beautiful that still lives to today. And I can make a bigger story out of this than it was. I mean, after all, I wasn't in combat, flying an F-15 or F-16 or F-21 in combat. But I'm just a civilian guy, so we're in a thunderstorm. And what I'm getting at is today kids say they suffer bipolar disorder, anxiety. In other words, they suffer from life, these weaklings. Instead of someone saying, hey, listen, kid, life is anxiety. Everyone is bipolar, schmuck. Just look at the tide. Straighten your head out, you putz. You're not sick. You're supposed to feel ups and downs during the day. You schmuck, you moron, straighten up. You don't need drugs. No one says that to the kids. They medicate them because the doctors are the drug peddlers of today. The doctors today are worse than the street drug peddlers. A fentanyl dealer is more honest than most of the psychiatrists today. Anxiety disorder, bipolar disorder. Hitler was bipolar by definition. That forgives you because you're bipolar? The hell does that mean, you schmuck, you? You needed a father to shake you by the shoulders and tell you to straighten up and stop being a putz and a sissy. That's all there was to it. Anyway, the point of the story is, what you do is you take your anxiety and you work with it. You make it into something. You create something. You create something. You don't suppress it with another drug. Or you wind up like this character who works for Biden in the dress and the heels, who steals women's luggage, and he was in charge of disposing of our nuclear arsenal. That's the best and the brightest that Biden could find, is the degenerate, sick piece of crap. That one belongs in a mental hospital. No, not because he wears heels, not because he puts on lipstick, but because he was in charge of the nuclear arsenal, and no one said you're an arse and shouldn't be in charge of the arsenal, you arse.
Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.